Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I'm Dr. Bruce Chalmer. Your co-host Judy Alexander has a cold today. Our topic for today is, can you forgive the unforgivable? I'll get into that in just a moment. First, I want to start off just by putting in a plug for some of the books that I've written and one of the books that our sponsor, Laria Zilber, has written. First of all, the book that started it all, as Judy likes to say, Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back. That has proven to be one of the more popular ones, and you can get that. One of the more popular formats, actually, is the audiobook. And I invite you to check that out. And also, my more recent book, It's Not About Communication, Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy is Wrong. That one also is growing in popularity. And some of the ideas that I've talked about in this podcast, of course, are what I write about in the books. And this podcast has a nice sort of synergy with the writing, because I like to talk about stuff on the podcast, and that helps in sort of developing the ideas as they go into the book. I also want to put in a plug for our sponsor, The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible by Laria Zilber. And if you've been following us for a while, you know Judy came out as actually being Laria. Laria is Judy's alter ego. And it is a beautiful book, The Blue Tent, a beautiful book of erotica, if you like really nice, hot, steamy erotica. And this is founded in a deep understanding and respect for Torah. If you like that, then you will love that book. It's available at lariazilber.com, or and if you go to the Amazon site, you'll find it in any of your favorite formats. So, let me get on with the topic for today. Can you forgive the unforgivable? Well, depends on what you mean by forgiveness. Now, I mentioned I'm writing a book about betrayal, you know, betrayal, forgiveness, and faith. And when I use the word betrayal, that's a pretty strong word. I'm not talking about, you know, a sort of minor disappointment of somebody. I'm talking about the biggies, you know, cheating on someone, leaving them, being horrible to them violently or otherwise. We have one of the stories in the book talks about somebody who was disinherited. We had a podcast guest on a few weeks ago that talked about that experience. Big betrayals. You know, you can't be betrayed by someone who isn't important to you. You can be hurt by anybody, but you can only be betrayed by someone of whom you have some relational expectations. So if you've been betrayed by somebody, you are hurt and often in shock. And, you know, one of the things that happens with betrayal is you feel like, how could this person of all people have done this to me? That's what a betrayal feels like, because you had the expectation that they wouldn't do something like that to you. So betrayal, dealing with betrayal, is a trauma. It's a major panic factor. It leaves people just reeling from the blow, so to speak. So how do you heal from that? Well, when I talk about forgiveness, part of the process of healing from betrayal is to reach the point where you're no longer sent into a panic by a thought of the betrayal or by a reminder of the betrayal. That's basically the same thing as healing from any sort of trauma. When you've healed from a trauma, it means you can think about it, or even more so, you can be reminded of it, whether it's consciously or unconsciously, and not end up in a panic. So the idea of forgiveness, when I define what I mean by forgiveness, that's what I'm talking about. It's the ability to be reminded of what happened and not be overwhelmed with anger or panic or shame or any of these enormous sorts of emotions that just render you sort of helpless for a while. How do you get there? How can you possibly forgive in that sense? How can you reach that point? Well, let me talk about what forgiveness isn't, as well as what it is. And I write about this in the book. I actually write a little bit about it in Reigniting the Spark as well. The idea of what forgiveness isn't, I think, is really important, because often people will use the term forgive. They'll say, well, I forgive you, which means I restore my relationship with you. If you forgive somebody, doesn't that mean that you say, okay, it's past, we don't have to dwell on it anymore, I can have my relationship be with you what it was before? Well, I'm saying, yeah, that's a common use of the term forgiveness, but I'm saying no, forgiveness does not necessarily mean that. When you forgive somebody in the terms I'm saying, you can give up being angry at them and nevertheless not restore your relationship. You can forgive somebody and still divorce them. You can forgive somebody, this is one of my favorite stories that I include in the book, you can forgive somebody and still maintain a restraining order against them. You can forgive somebody and still sue them in court. You can forgive somebody and still go to war against them if you have to. So, what does this sense of forgiveness mean if it doesn't imply that you're going to restore the relationship? Well, as I say, forgiveness means you can heal from the inside. Forgiveness means you're no longer oppressed by the thought of what happened to you. So I noted that, forgiveness doesn't mean that you restore the relationship. Forgiveness doesn't mean that you condone what they did. So you can forgive somebody who's done things that you still think are horrible and immoral and evil. You can still forgive somebody for that. You can forgive that. This is the sense in which, when I ask the question, can you forgive the unforgivable? I am claiming that if you think of forgiveness as an inside job, which is to say, you think of forgiveness as involving yourself, not whoever hurt you. I can let go of anger, even though the thing that happened to me was something that I would still consider massively immoral. So, the sort of quintessential example of this is, I'm Jewish. Can I forgive the Holocaust? Can I forgive Hitler? Well, I certainly would never condone anything about what Hitler did. It's pure evil. Can I forgive in the sense of I don't have to fly into a rage when I think about it? Yeah, that I can do. And in fact, what I'm claiming is it's better to do that because then I'll be smarter about how I deal with anti-Semitism. If I'm not completely panicked about the notion, I can recognize, well, this is a terrible thing. We have to oppose it. We have to do whatever we can to deal with its pernicious effects. But we don't have to panic about it because panic won't help. And moreover, not only do I not have to panic about it, but I don't have to suffer just by thinking about it. I can say, yep, this is one of the problems of the world we have to work on and take it very seriously, but I don't have to be oppressed by it. The impression is internal. So forgiveness, I suppose, I just thought of this at this moment, forgiveness is a way of freeing yourself from that oppression, freeing yourself from the oppression that what other people did to you had been causing you. So how do you manage to do that? How do you manage to actually get to the point where you can forgive things? You can get to that point where you're not oppressed by it anymore. You're not, thrown into a panic or thrown into anger by thinking about or being reminded of whatever happened to you. Well, how do you do that? I talk about three steps to forgiveness. The first step is to forgive yourself. Inevitably, when something happens to you, if you get hurt by something, we tend to blame ourselves. Even if it doesn't make sense that, even if it doesn't make sense in terms of any sort of rational understanding of what happened. I've worked with lots of adults who were sexually abused as children, sometimes starting from a very young age, and they will still often blame themselves. And it's, from an adult mind, it's like, come on, you were 3 years old. How possibly could you have prevented that? And people might understand that rationally, but emotionally, they're still blaming themselves. We always blame ourselves, at least in part, for what when bad things happen, because at least we're thinking, well, I should have done something to prevent it. I should have known better. I should have seen it coming. I should have stopped it when it started. Those are natural kinds of thoughts to have. There's an adaptive quality to having those kinds of thoughts, because if I didn't think that, I'd be faced with a world that is so impossibly horrible, and I'd have no control over it. So, I'd rather blame myself, at least in part. I'd rather think, well, must be because I was bad, must be because I deserved it, must be because of, something that is other than the fact that I have no control over it. So the tendency to blame ourselves, even when we really don't deserve any particular blame, is a normal tendency. And so that's why I claim the first step to being able to let go of that sense of pain and anger and panic that happens when you think about a betrayal, the first step is to forgive yourself. Now, what does it mean to forgive yourself? What it means is to recognize that you were doing the best you could under the circumstances. And those last three words are crucial, under the circumstances. You're doing the best you could given what the circumstances were. And, you know, if you include in that notion of what the circumstances were, what you knew and didn't know, what you could know and couldn't know, then you can recognize, wow, you know, I wish I had known better, but I didn't. I wish I could have done something, but I couldn't. You know, I know now, if I knew what was going to happen, I might have done something different, but I couldn't know what was going to happen. That's the interesting thing about betrayal. As I said earlier, betrayal happens when you tend to think, how could this person do that for, you know, to me? I never would have expected that. It's sort of built into betrayal that you didn't expect it. So how could you have known better? When you can actually accept that, that's when you're forgiving yourself. You can say, wow, I can have compassion for the me I was when that happened because I was doing the best I could. So that's basically how you forgive yourself. Now, step two in forgiving a betrayal is to forgive whoever hurt you. And you know, what I like to claim about this is, if you've managed to pull off step one, if you've managed to genuinely forgive yourself, accept that you were doing the best you could under the circumstances, then it's a pretty short step to forgive whoever hurt you. Because if you think about it, well, they were doing the best they could too. And look, I'm not saying it was morally acceptable. I'm just saying, given who they were, given what they understood, given what assumptions they were making, given the training that they had had, given whatever you want to say the circumstances were, that's what came up. That's, they were doing the best they could. And so that doesn't absolve anybody, as I said earlier, it doesn't absolve anybody of moral responsibility, but it does mean that you don't have to just continually be angry. You don't have to keep reciting to yourself how horrible they are. You can say, well, that's what they came up with. They did the best they could. So that forgiving someone who has hurt you, once you've figured out how to forgive yourself, extending that to the rest of humanity is pretty straightforward. It's like, well, I guess we're all doing the best we can, even when we screw up royally. So that's the second step. The third step is the one that sometimes people will say, what? And what I call the third step is forgive God. Forgive God? Now, I'm not going to get into a whole long disquisition here about what the word God means. I realize, you know, it's funny, I've just been writing about this in my new book. I realize I'm addressing at least three different audiences there. There's the folks who are sort of, you know, classical believers in God, however the Western religions tend to present God. And then there are the folks who are sort of, well, I'm spiritual, but I'm not real. I don't really believe in God. And then there are the folks who are saying, no, this whole God notion is nonsense. You know, and there's lots of variations there. I'm not going to get into a whole long thing about that. What I will simply note is the idea of forgiving God is essentially the idea of saying, here we are in this universe that gives us this tantalizing idea that we have some control over what happens. And we're wrong about that. We have some control, but we're sometimes, we don't have nearly enough control to prevent ourselves from getting hurt. We still get hurt. And so even if I can forgive myself, and even if I can forgive whoever hurt me, I'm still stuck with thinking, what is it about this existence business that gets me hurt like that? And when I can accept that, when I can say, well, you know, there's something about this whole business, even though it's painful often, there's something about this whole existence business that's right to be what it is. It's basically good. When I can get there, that's when I can let go of the anger. Now, what do I call that phenomenon? And those of you who've been following our podcast will probably guess the word I use for this. What do I call that phenomenon when you have accept the basic rightness of reality? That's what I call faith. So really, in as I understand the terms, faith is how you end up being able to forgive. Faith in the basic rightness of reality as a whole. Because, you know, if you think about that, that sort of subsumes the idea of forgiving yourself and forgiving whoever hurt you. The whole business is right to be what it is, even when it's messed up. We can't make it work out all the time that there isn't suffering. No matter what you do, there's going to be some stuff that just is part of the picture. It has to be. And so when you can accept the basic rightness of that, that's what lets you forgive. I'm claiming forgive essentially anything, including forgiving the unforgivable. Well, I would love to hear from you on these ideas. This is the stuff I'm in the middle of working on. So please drop us a line. The easiest way to do that is go to our podcast website, ctin7.com. That's the number 7. CT for couples therapy, ctin7.com. Go there. You will see there's an easy way to send us a message, us meaning me and Judy. And if you would like to comment on anything to do with betrayal, I'm still collecting betrayal stories, and of course on anything else as well, if you'd like to suggest a guest to be on our show, we have wonderful guests. Again, if you've been following us, you'll see we have all kinds of guests talking about all kinds of topics, and it really anything to do with, in the broadest sense, anything to do with couples work. We would be happy to hear from you. And you can suggest yourself as well. You can even sign up for a time to be interviewed. And when you do that, we'll ask you, gee, what do you want to be interviewed about? And that's how we'll get a sense of whether you'd be a good guest for us. And, you know, probably if you think you'd be a good guest, I'll bet you would be. We've had lots of wonderful guests, so I invite you to do that. Let me just close by putting in another plug for the book that started it all, Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back. Carries a lot of my, it's kind of a nice compendium of a lot of my favorite ideas. People tell me this book, among other things, makes them feel better. You know, when I write about forgiveness, forgiveness is all about feeling, you know, recovering, healing, feeling better from when bad things happen to you. A lot of people have told me that that book, in particular, Reigniting the Spark, has that effect of they just feel better. They feel this sort of infusion of faith. That's at least that's the effect I'm trying to have with that. Also, check out my more recent book. It's not about communication. Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy is Wrong. That one, this book in particular, if you are interested in how the heck I do couples therapy, which is, that's, by the way, the founding question that led us to call our podcast Couples Therapy in 7 Words. A colleague of mine asked me that question decades ago and said, how do you do couples therapy anyway? You know, silly question. Well, I came up with the 7 words. I said, well, I guess I'm basically telling people, be kind, don't panic, and have faith. That's the 7 words. So what I go into in that book, it's not about communication, is, among other things, I go into the details of how do I think about a first session? What sort of questions do I ask? How do I structure it? Again, people have told me that it's an interesting take on that, and it makes them think about the process of couples therapy very differently from how they did before they read the book, which is what a good book is all about. And I also want to put in another word for this lovely work of erotica, The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible by Laria Zilber, Laria Zilber being Judy Alexander's alter ego. And she wrote a beautiful book there. Again, if you're into erotica, and it is quite explicit, it is a lovely thing to do by yourself. It is a lovely thing to read with a partner. If you have any sort of background in the Bible, now we're Jewish, but you know, Christians as well might find this really fascinating. You'll either find it fascinating or you'll run screaming from the room. And of course, the people we're appealing to are the ones who would find it fascinating. So, you know, if you find the notion of biblical erotica is outside what you can tolerate, then don't buy the book. If you're intrigued by that, you'll love it. And it's really beautifully done. And I like to put in a special plug for the audiobook that Judy actually recorded. She has those of you who know this podcast know what her lovely voice sounds like. And she does a wonderful job reading that material. So I invite you to get that as well. And so until next time, remember, be kind, don't panic, and have faith.